Radio. Later on this evening, David Cameron, the Tory leader, the man who would be Prime Minister, will present himself to the people of Peckham, a largely African Caribbean audience, at the Harris Academy down there in SE. Where is it? SE 15, I think, Peckham, or is it SE 17? I think it's SE 15. And what he's really saying to people is, I am ready to be your Prime Minister. Whether you're black, white, Asian, Chinese, whatever, I am ready. I've got the tools, I'm equipped. But what does it really take to be a British Prime Minister? Let's speak to a man who's interviewed every one of them, from Ted Heath all the way through to Tony Blair. And think, people like Thatcher, Major, Callaghan, Wilson in between. He is Michael Cockerell. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning. I've interviewed a few more than that, including Gordon Brown and Harold Macmillan and Sir Alec Douglas Hume. Eight the last time I counted, may even be nine.
Oh, wow. I'm really sorry. I told him we missed out somebody. Yes, Gigi's quite right. From interviewing all those men and that one woman, what ingredients do you think a Prime Minister needs to be successful and to be sane, to remain sane in the job? Because the pressure must be absolutely intolerable. The forces of hell on you every day.
It's exactly right, yeah. I mean, Jim Callaghan, for instance, who was Prime Minister in the 70s, who is the only man alive who, he's no longer alive, sadly, who was the only man who held the jobs of Chancellor, Home Secretary, Foreign Secretary, and then became Prime Minister. So he was extraordinarily experienced, unlike David Cameron, who's never held a government job in his life and only been an MP for 8 years. This guy was an extraordinary experience, but he said to me that when he came there, they handed him the figures, the true figures for Britain's economy. Even though he'd been Foreign Secretary in the government, he'd taken his eye off the economic ball because that wasn't his responsibility. And he said, and what I saw made my hair stand on end. And this was a guy who'd been Chancellor himself. John Major said to me in his inimitable South London voice, when you walk in the door of number 10, reality walks in with you.
So even though you've been close to the centre of power, and I know that you've got a series which has been on BBC 4 and that launches on BBC 2 on Saturday evening, the Great Offices of State, it's still no real preparation for the top job, the First Lord of the Treasury, primus inter pares.
That's right, the first among equals. Because suddenly, even if you are Chancellor, Foreign Secretary, Home Secretary, or any of the other great offices of state, actually, the buck stops at number 10. And if there are more or less insoluble problems, you have to go to the Prime Minister and say, you better try and deal with this. And so all these kind of things come on a Prime Minister's desk, an amazing amount of things. And what Tony Blair said to me was that when he became Prime Minister, there he was in charge of what's called this Rolls-Royce machine, and he started pulling the levers, and he found that they weren't connected. This was one of the problems. He said, you know, all the time, it's frustration. He said, I still have the scars on my back from trying to, say, reform public services. And you do, although you have, in a way, one of the most powerful jobs in any democracy in the world, actually, there are many, many constraints that stop you doing what you want. I mean, in Tony Blair's case, one of the constraints was living next door. The bloke next door was Gordon Brown. So you have to run a cabinet. You have to keep your cabinet united. You have to deal both with immediate things and the long term. You have to be able to juggle 100 balls in the air at the same time. I remember someone saying to me, the thing about Tony Blair, he had a lawyer's quick mind and could turn on a sixpence and turn from one thing to the other. And it might be, you know, what's happening in Afghanistan at one moment or the drug crisis in South Shields in another, you know, some terrible murder. All those kind of things which land on a Prime Minister's plate, and they have to be able to be adaptable. Whereas Gordon Brown, for instance, likes to do one big thing at a time and concentrate on it.
With ever more intrusive press coverage and 24-hour news, etc., would you say that it's a much harder job today than it was, you know, a much harder job, say, for Gordon Brown than it ever was for Callaghan?
Yes, and say if you go back to the late 50s when Harold Macmillan was Prime Minister. I mean, he put on an act, but there was only one TV channel. There was no 24-hour news. There was no colourful radio. No, there was only two radio stations. Three, I suppose, the Light Programme, the Home Service, and the Third Programme. There, that shows how old I am. And no commercial radio at all. So the media demands on our Prime Minister were completely different from what they are today. Macmillan said to me, you know, when there was a crisis, I used to go off and read Jane Austen or Trollope. I mean, it took my mind off it. I think this was a bit of an act, because he called himself unflappable. But he did have time, and some people did go in and see him reading these Victorian novels in the midst of a crisis. Whether he kept the book sort of by his desk, and when someone came in, he picked it up, I wouldn't put him past it, because he was a great old actor himself.
You're quite the mimic, Michael. I didn't expect the shades of the Rory Bremner from you, but hey, I welcome it. I welcome it. But
what you want to hear my Enoch Powell?
Please do, yes.
Enoch Powell, I rang him up once when Michael Foot became leader of the Labour Party, and surprisingly, Enoch Powell had another side to him apart from the so-called Rivers of Blood speech. Mm-hmm. He was anti-common market. He was more or less a nuclear disarmer, and he was against House of Lords reform because he believed in the hereditary principle, whereas Michael Foot believed in abolishing the House of Lords. And so Powell and Foot worked closely together to stymie the Labour government's plans to reform the House of Lords or the Tory government's plans to get into the common market. And so I rang Powell up and said to him, will you do me an interview? Because Michael Foot is going to be elected leader, it looks like to me, and I'm doing a quick profile of him. And he said, absolutely, I'd be pleased to do that. And then I said, OK, I'll see you in your house in a couple of hours. He said, nay, tarry a while. I said, what is it? He said, is there something you haven't mentioned? I said, what's that, Mr. Powell? He said, the filthy lucre, the pot of Russian gold. I said, well, Mr. Powell, you know I can't negotiate fees with you. I am aware of the conventions that subsist within your organisation, but I believe you could have an input. I said, really? What are you talking about? He said, I think Enoch Powell and Michael Foot on the day the other, the one is elected leader of his own party, must be worth 100 guineas of anyone's money.
Oh, superb.
So
oh, superb. But you do that pitch just right, just right. But let's think about the man who could be Prime Minister within a couple of months, David yep. Cameron. He's presenting himself to the black community in Peckham this evening. Sure. He wants to say, I'm ready to be Prime Minister of this whole country. That includes you. I'm very aware of your specific concerns. Do you think, looking at him as he is today, what, 43, 44 years old, never had a real job outside of being a TV lobbyist, and then, of course, being a policy wonk and working for Norman Lamont and others, does he have what it takes? When you look at him, do you think, yeah, this man's ready as Tony Blair was, for example?
When you looked at Barack Obama, did you think he's never had a real job? Is he ready for it? He's the same age as Barack Obama. I mean, the thing about David Cameron, I did make a film with him, and he was one of the most difficult people to make a film about, because, as you say, his other job, apart from having been an advisor to various Tory ministers and then to Michael Howard when he was party leader, was mainly on presentation. He was the kind of media manager for Carlton Television. And all his formation has been about how things look, how they come across. And that was the kind of advice he would give, as well as policy advice, to the people he worked for. And I'd never made a film where the person I was making the film about was second-guessing everything I was trying to do all the time. And it was a kind of culmination related to what you're talking about, the pressures of the media. Most leaders become leader and get themselves a spin doctor. Mm-hmm. Dave, as Samantha calls him.
Allegedly.
We actually saw her calling in her rather interesting accent with Trevor MacDonald on Sunday, where she quite unselfconsciously referred to Dave. So no, and then the people around him do call him Dave. But Dave was a spin doctor who became leader. So it's quite interesting in terms of what he's, the presentational side, which you've talked of, which is very important for a modern prime minister, that is probably more highly developed in him through his own experience than any previous leader. But spin alone, those who live by the spin shall perish by the spin, as you have seen with some previous leaders.
Was there an episode that you can recall, Michael, in which you thought to yourself, oh, this guy, it's just too much. Let me do my job. Stop second-guessing everything I'm trying to do here.
Was there a moment when I thought that?
Yes.
I'm afraid I did. I think he was quite sort of cautious and quite defensive, and what he wouldn't accept was that what I was trying to do is to try and get to the essence of what makes him tick, who he is. Or maybe that's exactly what he did realize that was what, and he wanted to disguise it. He was much less open, this was a couple of years ago, than to a certain extent he was with Trevor MacDonald on Sunday. But many people thought that you know, the openness that seemed to come over may itself have been an exquisite piece of spin. He is an extremely bright guy. He's always had devoted followers, both at school and at Oxford. I think his life changed completely from being a classic stereotype Tory boy when when Ivan, his profoundly disabled son, was born. And suddenly, David Cameron, who'd had a golden rise, more or less to the top, married a beautiful, very rich, upper-class woman, everything had been going well for him, and then suddenly poor Ivan was born, who was you know, had to be fed by tubes. And one day when we were filming, I said to Cameron, "You're in a good mood today." He said, "I think Ivan may have smiled at me, and he hasn't done that for the last year." And wow. it was just very poignant. And I think suddenly this guy from the Etonian golden background, he was in touch with the social services, with the NHS. He suddenly saw that the world was not a simple glide to the top. And both Samantha and David were totally devoted to Ivan. And when he died, although he was bound to do so, it was the most profound shock. And I think he's a side of him which was may have been there or may not have been there, but it came out in a most powerful way as a result of having to deal with some of the awful things that many people have to deal with in their own lives. And I think there's a certain empathy that he has, which was not evident before, and it coincided with him becoming leader and his need, as he put it, to rebrand the party, to detoxify the Tory brand. So there's more to David Cameron than just the posh git.
I mean, that's interesting in terms of the human side, but I'm thinking more politically. Do you feel that there's a lack of substance in that area, and that he's lacking in the big political ideas? You talked about Michael Foot a little while ago. Obviously, he's recently, we lost him, but obviously he was one of those people that people respected and knew that he had genuine ideas and ideals and had the passion for politics. Do you see that in David Cameron? Because he didn't quite sound like that.
Yeah, I mean, you said the passion for politics. I think David Cameron has the passion for politics, but I think Michael Foot had, which made him such a singular character, especially these days. He had a whole set of ideological left-wing beliefs, and so much of politics, especially since Tony Blair, has moved to the centre ground, and people are concerned not to have a set of passionate ideological beliefs, whether they're right-wing or left-wing, because you're trying to capture the centre ground. And I think the question really is, what does David Cameron really believe in? And I think we still don't know. I think we know what he's done in terms of positioning the Conservative Party. But in the end, when you're Prime Minister, terrible problems, agonizing decisions come in front of you. And if you don't have a well-developed, core, profound set of beliefs, it becomes much more difficult to make the decision. And, you know, we're still finding that out with David Cameron, and we may not find it out until, if he gets to number 10, we see him challenged in that way.
Michael Cockerell, thank you very much indeed. Having interviewed 8 British prime ministers. Well, have you already interviewed a 9? We'll see, and we'll wait and see what Cameron is able to do tonight, of course, in Peckham, and see what happens on May the 6th, assuming that's the date of the election. Michael, just one more thing. It's on Saturday evening, your series on Great Offices of State, BBC Two.
It's a series which I have good reason to believe that all the political classes are watching, because many of them may be in charge of these great offices of state, starting with the Home Office, which deals with crime, asylum, immigration, and so on, then the Foreign Office, and then the Treasury. And it's at 7:30 on BBC Two on Sunday, and on Saturday night, and for the following two Saturdays, called The Great Offices of State.
Tremendous. Michael Cockerell, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks. Wonderful. A lot.
This is Colourful Radio.